So hello, everyone, and welcome to our NEPT content accountability calls. So these are the calls once a month where we're getting together to review the modules. We've been going in order from one till whatever. I don't remember numbers or anything, but we've been going in order. And this month's topic is one of my very favorites, which is blood chemistry. And I know a lot of you get a lot of exposure to that on our case study calls because we have a lot of you submitting your blood chemistries. And I want to share a lot on this that really will help you to stand out as a premier in your world in doing this, because most MDs don't really understand how to analyze blood chemistry. They just go by what the lab says is normal. And if you got a red mark that says you're high or low, then they say, oh, it's not too bad. Let's just wait till it gets worse, which is really kind of sad and scary. Right? It's very scary. In fact, we had one of our students who went through the very first year. She's an oncology nurse. And as she was learning this, she was so excited because she didn't learn this stuff in oncology and in nursing school. And she started to just pull out the records of all the different people that she had access to. And she was realizing not just were they not assessing from a standpoint of functional and the comparisons between them and ideal ranges, that she found people there with overt insulin resistance and overt issues that they weren't addressing because the person had cancer. They weren't looking at it as like, maybe that's why they have cancer, right? And that's where I want you guys to stand out, to be able to look at this stuff and be able to assess people decades maybe before they become diseased, right? Because we don't want to try to reverse disease. That's really fighting an uphill battle. What we want to do is catch people at the point of subtle imbalances. Maybe they're asymptomatic, but they have some subtle imbalances. And that was what I thought was supposed to be the reason for doing the annual blood testing, right? Like not to see, oh, did you suddenly become diseased? But more, oh, are you heading in the direction of something that's out of balance that we can prevent you from becoming diseased? And that's what I want you guys. And I know that so many of you just went from hearing you on these calls, no more than most of my colleagues who are medical practitioners. So I want you to like shine in this area, and there's so much to it. So I'm going to go through what we have in the module, but I'm also going to take a lot of side steps to throw in my opinion and throw in my expertise and experience with that. Because I got to the point that I can look at things really quickly and see what's out of balance and see the connections. But let me just tell you, when I first started doing this, it took me hours. So those who are saying, how does she do that? It takes me hours to go through that. That's normal, right? It does take you hours to appropriately do it, because what you're doing is learning what these different things mean and what the balances should be. It's going to, but think of that as part of your learning process. That's part of your learning process. So that's why we've given you access to the blood chem software. We've given you access to my cheat sheet, the spreadsheet, the master tracker. When I first started out, I didn't have anything like that. So I would sit there with the labs. I would sit there with the paper printout of the optimal ranges, and I'd have to go through and manually mark them. You've got an advantage here, and I do too, quite frankly, with my spreadsheet, because it turns color and I can see. And I could see color spatters throughout the page and start to get an idea of pattern recognition, right? And pattern recognition is, for many people, if not most people, it's easier than it is trying to look at little numbers and understand and remember ranges and stuff. I mean, numbers for most people drive them nuts, right? So we've made it easy. Plus the blood chem software, although my ranges are slightly different from his, which are slightly different from other people in the functional medicine range. We're still in that ballpark of this is out of balance. We're not waiting to have overt thyroid disease. We start to see those antibodies up, you know, even above 10. Don't wait for it to be 34 and have actual tissue damage that can happen. Let's just catch them when they're in an early range. Let's just look at it and say, wow, does this person have anemia? And you just pop iron on them. Like, people are tired. They give an iron. Could actually make them worse if they're in a state where cancer is causing them to be tired, right? Because the iron is oxidative, and that causes oxidative stress that can make cancer worse. So we don't want to make somebody worse, right? And the Hippocratic Oath first do no harm, right? So we don't want to harm people by giving them even nutrients or supplements that aren't going to work for them. So I'm going to take you guys through. Here's the blood chem. And you can see over here under core content, there are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15. So 12 actual functional units. And you can see I've divided it up not like by this section, this section, this section, or the particular labeled names of the groupings of tests, but more by the functional units. And you'll see as we go through, you know, say CBC and anemia, that's actually the same section, the CBC, but it's anemia and it's also immune function, right? So we're going to learn to look at the test functionally and get an understanding of what might be out of balance with this person so that you can help them. So when we look
Dr.
at the
Marie, can I interrupt? Yeah.
Sharing my screen.
You've made me co-host instead of Lynn.
I did. Oh, how funny. Yeah. Oh, good. All right. Well, you can help me out here. Okay. Let me put my.
Yeah, we'll train all of you. You'll all take turns being co-host. So you get to.
That you get to practice it. Yeah. Here we go. Okay. So share, I've got my screen shared. And all right. So let me go to where it says participants. Lynn Moore, co-host. Yes. I mean, it doesn't matter if there's multiple co-hosts. All right. I didn't undo you. It just was easier to just make her co-host. Okay.
Okay.
So this is the blood chemistry. All right. And what are our objectives? Objectives here. I want you to feel comfortable looking at analyzing people's labs using a variety of tools and resources. I want you to understand and be able to explain to your clients what does a normal range mean versus an optimal range, because that's something you're going to have to explain to people when you say, oh, look at this, and they're going, well, the doctor didn't say it was wrong. The doctor didn't tell me it was bad, to be able to explain that. I want you to understand all the components that are typically part of a standard metabolic panel. In the advanced blood testing unit, we go into the stuff that's not part of a standard metabolic panel. Although in here, we do go through a few of them that are not part, that should be part of a standard panel. I want you to be able to look at signs of anemia, like be able to tell if this person has a potential immune problem. Not that they have an overt raging bacterial infection or viral infection, but that they're subtly imbalanced, that there may be some kind of chronic subclinical infection and that you want to investigate further. You never want to say to somebody, oh, look at this, your neutrophils are a little high and your lymphocytes are a little low, you have a bacterial infection. First of all, that's called diagnosis and we can't do that. But also we want to say, oh, some of these numbers are out of range. The balance is not quite. We have to be looking for and evaluating to see if there's some subclinical or chronic kind of an infection going on that might be making these numbers out of balance. Detecting signs of anemia. And I want you to see, how do you read a CBC to be able to determine what kind of anemia this person might have? What are some general indicators that there's probably anemia going on? And then how do you know? And how do you look at subtle things, which I love to talk about, is when you have two kinds of anemia superimposed on each other, right? Which makes the stuff look normal. And there's a few indicators that there are that you can say, oh, wait, you know, iron looks good. Ferritin looks good. MCV looks good. But what, homocysteine might, well, maybe not. It wouldn't in this case. But MCV looks good. What can I do to differentiate? Because the RDW, which we'll get to that in a minute, is high. So that indicates there's some sort of an imbalance here. Then what tests do you want to run to confirm, to rule in or out a different kind of anemia? Put your client's labs into both the master tracker and the blood chemistry software and be able to do that comfortably. That's not a hard thing to do. That's a data entry feature. And then know what the components are of a comprehensive thyroid screen and understand how to interpret it. And that is not stuff that's typically on a blood chem. So I said, you know, it's the typical stuff, but that's where we get into the more advanced. Why? Because I think you all need to know this right from the start, because most practitioners are not doing a full thyroid panel. So hi, Allison. I see Allison came on. So we ready? Do these look like good objectives? Can you think of any other objectives that you would like to be able to do at the end of this module? Like, what are the things like, oh yeah, I have no idea how she does that. I want to be able to. I think I covered it all, but if there's something missing, we're happy to add it. Improvement. There is a pretest. It's like everything else. It's a short pretest. And many of you might be able to pass this if you've been to any of our calls, but maybe not. And don't feel discouraged if you can't. It's really, this is the old pretest, right? This one, interesting. This, remember all the others had the gradable ones? We may have to look at getting this one. So anyway, this is just free form. So you don't even get a grade on it, right? It's just what's a CBC, what's it used for, what's included in a thyroid panel. And this is again, just for your own benefit. But I wonder how this got missed. We may want to make a note of that and let Czar know. But then we have to provide him with the things. I know that Jan was doing all of that before she went and got a full-time job. All right, so then we have our core content. You could see there's a lot of subtopics here. And we do have a video for each one. I start with an introduction. Like, what is chemist? What is blood chem? And why are we doing it? And there's a content review quiz at the end of this section. So we got the content review quizzes in. I'm interested to see why the pretest didn't get done. Maybe just an oversight. So we have a content review at the end of each of these. Any of the modules that have a lot of sections on the core content, we like to give you a little content review quiz. So before you move on, you do that, make sure you've covered it. Because I know when I was in school and we would just get a midterm and a final, there was a lot that went into it and you had to go back and review. So I really liked when we had pop quizzes at the end of each section so that it forced me not to do my typical wait till the last minute to study. So that's why we did that. And so we have the introduction and the introduction, you know, you get slides and transcripts for everything. Highly recommend that you print out the transcripts, print out the slides, have it in your binder, and then mark as you're watching, like the stuff that you really feel like I've got to remember this. There's the intro. We're basically just, what is it? What's included in a normal one? What are we going to cover in this whole unit? So we have the list of the different topics, right? And then intro to blood chem, why do we do it? And I talk about all this, how often should you run it? And then some resources and some books. The books, this one, these are the ones that I studied. These are actually, I have like 20, at least 30-year-old versions of these books because I got them when I was in school. But these are kind of the classics that are used in teaching conventional stuff. And it's good to have one of them because that way you can look up, you know, and get the nitty gritty on what they mean. This is Dickon Weatherby's, and he's the founder of the company that made the blood chem software. His is a really good book from a functional perspective. Michael Wald, his isn't as well organized as Dickon Weatherby's is, but it's a good reference book for the computerized version. We have my spreadsheet. These are how you can get computerized interpretations. This blood detective is a $4,000, $5,000 program. The blood chemistry software that you're using costs $65 to $150. I don't know what the ranges are now. They used to have a way that you can do it by packets, like you spent a certain amount for a certain number, or you can get unlimited. I got grandfathered into whatever it was when they first started it because I was one of the first people to sign up. So I pay $65 a month and I get unlimited. And that's why I'm able to share my stuff with you. And then, you know, it's just basically giving you some general, really don't gloss over this, guys. It's going to give you an overview of everything, and then we're going to go into a lot of depth with it. Showing you my thing, the lab course, how they change. So anyway, really worthwhile for you to spend time on that intro. Don't gloss, over it, thinking, oh my God, it's really going to give you a lot. It's probably about an hour, no, 36 minutes. So it's a good overview of everything and just really play with it. If you have to watch it twice, read the transcript, watch it once, read the transcript a couple of times, highlight so that you remember the key salient points. A few things here. So CBC and anemia. So how do we look at the CBC for anemia markers? And then what other labs do we have to look at to see if a person has anemia? So this one has, let's see, we'll look at the printer friendly slides. So we show you what the CBC has. There's anemia markers and there is immune system markers. Really a good idea to be able to study this and know this so that when you're looking and you're thinking, oh, does this person have an infection? Does this person have anemia? You know what the markers are, right? The anemia markers are more on the red blood cell side and the immune system markers are more the white blood cells. The one thing I want to point out to you is this RDW. A lot of people don't look at this. A lot of doctors I talk to don't even know what it is. They don't even understand it. It's the red cell distribution width. And it's at a glance look to see, does this person potentially have an anemia? And it's basically what's the average of the sizes of the blood cells, right? So if it's the variation between them. So the MCV is the size of it. MCV, mean corpuscular volume, the size of it. And in iron deficiency anemia, they get really small. And in B12 and folate anemia, they get big. They're immature. And if there's a lot of variation, like the RDW is high, above 13, it means that there's a lot of variation in there. And I use that as an indication that there's definitely anemia going on and there may be some superimposed both ways. So we look at the RDW, even if all the other markers that we teach you about are normal, even if the hemoglobin's good and the hematocrit is good and the MCV is good, if that RDW is off, there's something funny going on in there and we want to evaluate it. So I go through all the symptoms of anemia. So it's, you know, it's not just reading blood chem, but also asking. So if you see signs in the blood chem of a specific imbalance, that you know how to ask the right questions. And you know, back from your module on history taken, there's tons of stuff to learn. Types of anemia and how they show up. How do they show up? I highly recommend that you access the full size version of these and print out the ones that have like the types of presentations and have it in your little binder, your cheat binder, because none of us is going to remember all this. It's going to come from over and over again exposure to it. And you're going to go, okay, this person has this. Okay. It might be this sorts of presentation. Again, you're not diagnosing. You're just giving an idea of what kind of things you want to rule out or rule in. We talk about the stages of iron deficiency anemia and what might be going on and what you might be seeing here. And then we have the folate and B12 anemia. Anemia, there's some times when you're real, it's a red flag, right? If you have internal bleeding, you want to be able to rule that out. If somebody has a really low iron, you want to be able to rule out. It could be internal bleeding. It could be a condition, a genetic condition called thalassemia. So I want you to know, and we go through this in detail here. I mean, there's probably 14 hours worth of education in this module. So the idea of this call is to help you just to see it, to see what's there, the treasure trove that you have, and actually spend the time learning this stuff. Anemias of excess, right? And then some cases. And I always try to throw in cases in each of these pieces so that you can see it in action. The more cases you see, the more you're going to be able to actually understand this and learn how to use it. Any questions so far on that?
Yes.
Yes.
I have a friend that's a chiropractor, she and her husband, and they did this thing one day that was a seminar where they take your blood and they put it under a microscope.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was really interesting because they were showing me slides of people that had like not much oxygen or really bad blood cases. And it looked like a snake, the way all the blood cells were
mm-hmm.
wrapped together.
Yeah. That's a live blood cell analysis.
Okay. So anyway, I'm not sure. I think one of the doctors was upset because when they looked at my blood, you know, it had nice spacing, and then one of them died off with a smile on his face. It was kind of cool. But I had just had a glass of ink before I had gone. And so, you know, they were trying to get me to do stuff before the slide, and then, redo the blood, look at it again.
Mm-hmm.
So how is that something that's available to us? Because that was really kind of interesting.
You need a very expensive microscope to do it. They're like about $10,000.
Well, I don't want to do that. But
okay. You need to be able to, I guess you don't need to be able to draw blood. You could give the person the lancet and have them draw it and put it on the side. So I'm not sure that you have to have that within your license. And then, you know, there are trainings. There's trainings that you can go to, and they're extensive trainings to learn how to do that. So that's a more advanced technique than this. This is more the go to the lab, pay $100, get your blood chemistry taken, and be looking at the actual constituents. I think one with the live blood cell analysis without a history and without looking at what other things are going on is I don't want to say parlor tricks, but there's people who take certain pieces and they do it, and they do it like at health fairs. And every time I've done that, and I'm not saying your friends are like that at all, but every time I've done that, it was usually someone who would do the little test for free or for $10 or $20 at a fair. And then they suddenly, oh, you're a mess. Here's $300 worth of supplements that you need to take every month. And here's, you know, the form where you can renew them every month. So some people use it to sell supplements. Some people use it as a scare tactic to get people to comply. I'm not saying it's invalid. It's totally, there's a lot of good stuff there. My concern is that a lot of the folks who do it are not skilled or trained in anatomy and physiology. Now, I had a friend who is a naturopath up in Canada, and he did it, and he wasn't into selling supplements at all as a result. He was into selling people into eating good food and resting and sleeping and getting their stress levels low because he could find those signs in there. So it's just, I just take those with a grain of salt as to, you know, what they really, what the interpretation really means, because they are more subjective type of interpretation. It's like, oh, it's shaped this way or that versus numbers, but not saying it's bad. I totally think it's a valid part of a complete assessment. It's just, it's out of the range of most people. Most people don't want to spend $10,000 for this microscope.
Okay. Well, that kind of confirms my feelings about it, because I think one of them was disappointed that they weren't going to get me as a client. And yes, they do have a lot of supplements. And there was someone I had actually tried to partner with. And when we had the restaurant, like, let's do food for your clients. Let's come up with a food plan. You know, and it's like, well, nobody's going to eat greens. You know, they'll do a powder and supplements, which was kind of disappointing to hear that the functional chiropractor doctor here talks that way.
It's not uncommon. Very few people are really looking at food, functional food approaches. And there's no way that I can have a profit center within my business if I'm telling people to go to the farmer's market and buy good food. Right. So it's, you know, sometimes it's from a business perspective. I have shied away from so many of my colleagues making their own supplement lines, et cetera. I personally want myself to be totally unbiased when I'm recommending supplements or herbs. And so I want to recommend what's best for that person, not what's sitting on my shelf that I need to move or I'm going to lose money in inventory. Does that make sense? And I'm not saying that that's how people are, but a lot of folks, you can get in that mode. I remember when I did have supplements and I'd buy a little bit of Thorn and a little bit of Metagenics and I'd have all this stuff, but they always made you buy in bunches of six. And I would be like, oh, I still have three of those kidney whatevers and they're going to expire. Who can I find that needs it? Right. And when I found myself starting to think that way, I was like, no. And I've lost thousands of dollars in supplements that have gone past their expiration date. And so I decided that's not it. We're just going to send people off.
All businesses are like that. Because when I was in the security industry, that was, oh, you're going to raise the quota. And then you have to go find people to make them buy more security products when it might not be suitable.
It may not be what they need. And I want to always remain pure in recommending to people what they need. When I send people off to Mountain Rose Herbs or Z Natural Foods or, you know, to buy whatever, beetroot powder or whatever, I'm going to get a commission on that. I'm just sending them off. Yeah, we do get a little commission for the Dr. Supplement store. But those, I just happen to use those because it's a convenient place to get all the brands that I like. And I don't like, oh, I'm going to send them to a brand I don't believe in because I get a commission on it. No, these are people I've been over the years supporting and sending people to. So it's just, you have to make your own decisions about how you want to do it. You know, you have to eat. You have to be able to support yourself. Supplements can be a great extra income if you do it right. And you just have to make sure that you stay within true to your ethics, right? And true to what that person really needs.
And look at their history.
I look at their history in detail, their labs, and, you know, their emotional state. Right. I mean, I've had people last year, we had somebody come on and did a spotlight coaching on our 2-day workshop, the one that's coming up this weekend. And I went through this whole thing and I said, I'm not going to let you join. I said, you need to work on the emotions. You need to work on the self-sabotage. And I sent her to Laura, and Laura came in the next day and spoke, and she was like, that's what I need. And I said, that's what you need. And when you've gone through that, you know, if you're ready to join our program, you can. But I don't want to be just another little peg on your wheel of things that didn't work because you didn't really address the root cause. And she felt good. I mean, I probably, if I was, you know, got into my sleazy salesperson mode, I probably could have, I'm pretty convincing. I can be pretty convincing. I probably could have gotten her to sign up, but that wasn't what she needed. And I didn't want that energy and that guilt of like taking her money when she really needed this other thing. You know what I mean?
Right.
Yeah,
but so that works out in the end.
It does. She gets what she needs. People were, you know, they thought they could trust. They felt like they could trust me then. If I said, wow, this program is really good for you, they felt they could trust me then, because I turned this one away and I said, I'm not what you need right now. Right. And we all have to do that kind of stuff. And I always put it out when we're diverging, but I always put it out there when we're doing enrollment conversations is, come and fill out an application and we'll determine if it's a good fit. And if we go through and we go, you know what, I really don't think this is a good fit. I think you should do this instead. Then I'll send them to that instead. Make sense?
Yeah.
Right. And then you build this, people trust you. So, all right.
Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. Before we go through each of these, I don't want to spend too much time with each of these, but I want to just go through what's in the advanced topics and the done for you and the next steps, because, and we will go through these and just kind of give you some highlights that I want you to be looking for as you study it. I wish I had stuff like this when I was in school learning this stuff. You know, it was so dry and so like, okay, we're done. And I did go to a Karazian weekend workshop many years ago on blood chemistry. And I've done, you know, Dickon Weatherby's, I've read his book and, you know, I've read a lot of stuff and I've synthesized it together, but I wish I had something like this that put it together. So on the advanced, I list some of those books you saw on that first set of slides, the kinds of books you can make sure you have one at least, make sure you have at least one. Ideally you have one that's functional and one that's conventional, because then you can really understand the science and the pathology behind some of this stuff too. But also having those helps if you've got somebody that's coming in and they've been to other doctors and they're trying to figure out what's wrong and they have some weird obscure tests that we don't talk about, you at least have a good reference to look it up. Now, that said, the internet's also good, but you have to then weed through the good versus the bad. These are, you know, known entities, and probably there's, you know, I may have edition one and right now there's edition 17 out because it was so long ago when I studied this. Lab Tests Online is an online one that has it, the Blood Detective, the Blood Chem software. So we have access to all of these. Within the Blood Chem, I believe you have, within the program, you have access to some of the trainings that he's done. Not all of them, but some of the trainings are actually accessible from in there. And you know that in that Blood Chem software, you can use that as an education tool, because when you get somebody's labs back and you put them in, you can actually click the hyperlink and it'll tell you, what does it mean for it to be high or low? So instead of in a vacuum trying to memorize all these things, what it means, you're going through practically, oh, my mom has this, this, and this, and you click on it, now you get it. And the next time somebody comes in with that, it's going to be closer to your forefront of your brain. This was a presentation, I don't know if it's even still available, let's see, of somebody who was sharing how you can...
Hello, this is Dr. Stuart Hoover, Doctor of Natural...
Yeah, how you can actually market, if you're doing, I know some of our students are... using a blood chem analysis as an entry point into their system. Like, hey, for $100, $150, I will give you a computerized report. So I'll talk to you about it. And they use it as an enrollment conversation if it's a good fit to get them into doing like an ongoing program with them. And it's working pretty well. I know Lisa does that. Tony does that. And I think there's a couple of other people that were toying with that. So this is an example of somebody that's actually doing it in the real world. So this was another one. So some of these are really nice little online.
Hi there, I am Alex Alexander, and this.
Yeah, so the more you hear it from different folks, the more you're going to get it, right? You may hear different perspectives, and that's why I put those in there in the advanced. The done for you. We have the Master Health Tracker. And here's the thing with the Master Health Tracker. My preference is that you don't give people the Master Health Tracker. My preference is that you fill it in and you show them and maybe print a PDF of it, of just those pages for the person. So you've gone through, you've put the stuff in there, and then you can just say save as or download as or a PDF. You can just have that and give them access to their report as a PDF. But it is proprietary, and it is something that, you know, we edit all the time, et cetera. So I highly recommend that that's the way you do it. So this PDF, if you wanted to give it to somebody as a PDF and have them fill it in, you can just print out those particular pages in it. And I'm pretty sure this is just, oh yeah, this has lots of stuff in it. Yeah, so I don't want you to give these away. It's more like you use these and then you fill it in and then you can give them what you filled in for them, but not giving them this whole document because it is proprietary. At some point maybe we'll make some arrangements for licensing it, et cetera. Next steps is the place where you get to put this into action. So after you've learned this stuff, or while you're learning this stuff, find as many people as you can who are willing to do blood work and get a free analysis, or paid if you'd like. Like, do your family members, do them, run them through the blood chem, run them through the Master Tracker, get comfortable with it. And then maybe you charge your friends like, you know, $15 or something, but get them to do it and get practice. I think it's a good idea. And you don't have to be all the way through the module to be able to do it, because once they give it to you, you have access to everything to be able to figure it out. Don't be shy about it. Don't feel like you have to have it all ideal. I mean, when I get on practice, I just started doing this, and that's how I learned a lot of it. For each person you analyze, go through the process of first looking at the labs like a conventional doctor did. Then put your functional hat on and put the numbers into the Master Tracker and labs. So the first glance is, oh, this looks normal, right? This looks normal. Or, whoa, this person has high white blood cells. I wonder if there's an infection. Oh, it looks like it's high neutrophils, maybe probably a bacterial infection, and probably overt, right? Because it's outside the range that the doctors look at. But then you put it in the Master Tracker and then, you know, kind of look at that and the blood chemistry report. Take your time. If it takes you 3 hours to go through a blood chem, that's kind of normal if you're doing it the right, you know, you're learning it and you're learning how to analyze it. That's a learning experience. Investment in your education. And then use the blood chem software as a learning tool. It's filled with amazing descriptions. That's what I was talking about before. The ranges, you click on it, you can understand what next steps would be. And then submit cases. Bring them to our call. Submit your cases and let's go through them. Bring them to our open coaching. If it's just a lab, if you have a whole person and you're submitting multiple labs, and bring it to the case studies. It's a great way for all of us to learn from your people. Okay. And the exam, I think, is fairly long. Let's just see. My guess is it's over 50 questions because there's a lot here, right? There's a lot to learn. Okay, 85 questions, okay? So you can glance at this, you know, when you feel like you're ready to take it, glance at the questions and then go look things up. It's not called cheating, it's called learning, right? You don't get that advantage when you go to school, you know, maybe some point we'll add a random, you know, off the top of your head, but that's not what this is about, right? I have books surrounding me. When something comes up, I pull the book down, you know, here's my lab. Francis Fishbaum, It's from probably, it's all like yellow. It's so old. It's from 1988 is the latest version I have. And you can look things up. I always do that. I always look things up. So that's why I think it's practical when you're looking at the labs that you do an open book test and that you have your reference materials. You have to know how to use your reference materials, and that requires you to be familiar with the information. So, okay. Questions so far on that? Yeah. Is this helpful? Yeah. All right. So is it going to be helpful for me to go through the various ones and just point out some highlights that you should be aware of in each of the sections? Yeah. Okay. So we went through the CBC. Immune function, right? I give you a little background on the immune system. You know, we have a whole module on the immune system in, I think it's module 16 or something. But this is going to be the immune system and your little quiz. A lot of times it's helpful to look at the quiz before you go through so you know what some of the key points are so you're paying attention. And let's see, it's about 16 minutes long, so it's not real long. This is what the slides look like. And again, some of these are going to be things you want to print out and keep into your cheat sheet binder. Put them in sleeves. Keep them in there so that you can reference a lot of these things and not have to, you know, sit there going, whoops. What does the CBC immune system markers, what covers? So for the immune system, it's the white cells. So we're looking at the white cells. Always make sure that these folks get a CBC with differential. A lot of them don't. Differential means that they're looking at the percentages of each of the specific types of the blood cells, white blood cells. Some of them just show the absolute. I mean, unless you want to get out your calculator and start figuring out percentages, it's not going to make sense for you to see that there's, you know, 2,000 neutrophils and 40 eosinophils and whatever, because it's percentage that makes a difference, right? If the white blood cell count is normal, you can still have skewed percentages of the various things indicating an imbalance potentially in that area. So we have those. And this slide, I would memorize the white cells, like this primary defense, the neutrophils are often elevated, notice often, not always, in bacterial infection, lymphocytes in viral. These are the main ones. So between the two of these, you're going to get probably 90% of all your white blood cells. The others should be very low or zero is just fine. Monocytes are a second line, so they're going to be elevated in recovery stage or in a chronic stage. So I'll often say to somebody if they have elevated monocytes, have you recently recovered from a cold or a flu or a urinary tract infection? And they go, oh yeah, just last week. So that would explain why the monocytes are high. If you see it repeatedly on tests, so they say, no, I haven't had, you know, anything in ages, then it's probably chronic, a chronic low-grade infection that's there for, in the long haul. Basophils are usually related to histamines and allergies, but could be related to parasites as well. So when we see basophils, you start to ask people, do you have allergies that cause you to sneeze and wheeze? Do you have foods that you eat certain foods and your face turns red? You might see an elevation in basophils and histamine sensitivities. And then eosinophils, parasites, and allergies. So there's an overlap between the basophils and the eosinophils in terms of parasites. A lot of people who have immediate hypersensitivity allergies, you're going to see eosinophils raised, but you might also see it in others. Ideally, what I usually see is something like, I like to see the monocytes, you know, six or less. The basophils, one or less, the eosinophils, two or three or less. So really those three make up less than 10% or 10%-ish of the total. And if not, we want to look to see what's going on there. So we go in here and we talk about what's going on with the bacterial and viral, what we might see in terms of how things are going. And then we look if there are other immune markers. So if we suspect that there's a problem based on the white blood cells, let's look at the rest of the blood chemistry, right? Is the uric acid high as well? It could be rheumatoid arthritis or gout. You know, if the globulin is low, it could be infection and there's low antibodies, et cetera, et cetera. So it gives you the idea of all these other places that you can look through. I don't expect you to memorize this, but what I would say is these are great charts to have in your booklet, because as you look at somebody who has an abnormal CBC, you're going to scan through the rest and then just circle which of these others are high or low and try to piece together the picture. Does that make sense? With immune system markers, you also may see some inflammatory markers. So we've talked a lot about CRP, C-reactive protein, erythrocyte sedimentation rate, SED rate or ESR. But other signs of inflammation would be homocysteine. You can look at a blood spot fatty acid, which wouldn't be on this particular test, but it's an extra one. ANA, which would be an indicator of kind of a generalized autoimmune, although it's very highly associated with lupus. Rheumatoid factor, interleukin and cytokines. I don't think I've ever run leukotrienes or cytokines, but some people have brought them in to me, complement and all that. And then cardiovascular, and we'll go into more detail on those in the advanced module. And then the advanced cardiovascular, like the apolipoprotein, a lot of you have gotten those markers and learned about them through Dr. Hopkins. And then I gave you some cases. So it's a really, you really have an advantage when you understand this. And you don't want to, here's the thing, you don't want to get people scared. Like, oh my God, you must have a chronic bacterial infection. And, you know, meanwhile, they're just a slightly above the optimal range. But you really do want to say, yeah, there may be something going on. This may have something to do with your gut issues, or it may have something to do with your fatigue, that your body's fighting a viral infection, right? If it's an elevated lymphocytes, we want to talk to them about, did you ever have mono? Have you ever had CMG and other kinds of viral infections? Hepatitis, right? There's all those viral infections that you want to look at. Questions?
I have a question, Rita Marie. Last year, I had to get a very expensive hematology visit and a couple of tests done for my like low white blood cell count. And now I don't know the details, like which specific ones were low or the differential, like you mentioned. But I was just curious. At the end, the specialist told me it's okay for women my age and of certain ethnicities to have low white blood cell. Is that?
Yeah, so there are more and more we're seeing that the optimal, a recent blood chem software weekend workshop that I went to, he talked about how he sees as four as being perfectly fine, especially for people who are clean living, you know, eating young, eating a lot of raw foods and, you know, whole foods, that their body doesn't have a lot to create an immune response against. So, you know, what you're looking for with the low is if somebody's consistently got a 3.5 or a 4 on their white blood cell count and it's consistent and the person is really doing well and is healthy, it's not something to be concerned about. I mean, it's something initially to look at and investigate, right? But if somebody's going down, they started out as a 5, now they're a 4, now they're going to 3, then we're going to look for what's going on because something's shifting, right? There's a lot of people who say raw foodists have low white blood cell counts because when you eat a meal that's filled with cooked foods and, you know, some of the toxins that get created when you heat food, that the body mounts a response, a white blood cell response, and that if you're not doing that it would be lower.
Yeah, that makes sense. That was around the time when I went raw, so it makes a lot of sense. But it was so expensive to find out that nothing was wrong with me. A lesson learned.
Yep. I probably would have said, well, that's out of my budget. Let's just wait 6 weeks and try this again. And if it's like not going in the wrong direction, just keep monitoring it. Because it costs like $35 or $25 maybe even to do a CBC versus, you know, it could be $100 to start doing antibodies and all kinds of advanced hematology. Mm-hmm. Yep. So fluids and electrolytes, right? A lot of people get out of balance with electrolytes. We were just talking to somebody in Sweet Spot the other day, and I'm like, go to your doctor, get an electrolyte test, because she's reversed her diabetes in terms of her blood sugar is way down, and now her blood pressure went way down. around the same time, but I still want to make sure she gets evaluated that there isn't some internal bleeding. I didn't tell her that. I didn't want to alarm her, but I just said, look, get it checked out. Because if you see somebody's blood pressure suddenly go down, there may be internal bleeding. I once, you know, I was feeling awful. This was 35 years ago. I was just feeling weird and I checked my blood pressure and it was like, I don't know, 80 over 60. And then it went down to 70 over whatever. It got down into really low. And a friend of ours was visiting and he was an intern at the time. And he said, we got to get you to get checked out. There's something going on here. And he didn't know why. He goes, something's going on. There may be some internal bleeding that's causing you to have your blood pressure drop like that. And I went and it turned out I had an ectopic pregnancy. So my tube had burst. So there was some internal bleeding and it was causing my pressure to go down. So you just always want to make sure that if there's a sudden change in anything, that people are evaluating it to make sure that there isn't anything critical that needs to be addressed. Make sense? Yeah. So fluids and electrolytes, you know, that will help maintain blood pressure, right? To have the sodium, potassium, chloride. So we want to go through and, you know, explain all that. When people are fasting, right? Or shift to a ketogenic diet, a lot of times they lose a lot of the electrolytes because as you start to burn fat, the fat stores fluid and the solutes follow fluid. So you can end up with a down. And a lot of times people feel they get the keto flu and they switch to a ketogenic diet. And actually, if they just took electrolytes to replace what they were losing until they got on even keel or drank celery juice or ate seaweed, you know, to keep their electrolytes up, they would feel better. So basically, what are they? The sodium, chloride, potassium, carbon dioxide, which is really bicarbonate. And we use that as a rough indication of whether the person's in alkalosis or acidosis. But we teach you how to determine based on this, what are they more likely to be acidic or alkaline based on the levels of these particular electrolytes. And then you can also, I don't want to say guess, what's the word? Insinuate an issue with adrenals because adrenals control that. Aldosterone, which is one of the hormones secreted by the adrenals, controls the fluid retention or expulsion. And when somebody's in a state of hyper or hypoadrenal secretion, then they're going to change that aldosterone so the blood pressure can go up or down. Right. And my suspicion with this person at the beginning was that she probably had some hyper adrenal stuff going on as a result of the blood sugar, right? The imbalanced blood sugar. And now that she's gotten that under control, she's gotten that calmed down and her blood pressure was normal before, but it might be that she's always had a tendency to low blood pressure, but because of this stress, it was keeping it higher. And once she got rid of the stress, it came down. So all these things were all speculation on my part based on anatomy, physiology. But it may not be true. So I wanted her to get this stuff tested. So when the potassium is high and the sodium is low, the chloride's low, the glucose is low, or some combination of this, it could be that they're in adrenal fatigue. If the potassium is low, the sodium's high, and it can be a chloride high, glucose high, triglycerides, hyperfunction. And so she had this high glucose, and she was maintaining everything. But now that she has gotten her blood sugar under control, it wasn't, her blood pressure was going down. I did get her to do some ashwagandha and licorice to try to get some support there. And she did find that if she took the licorice, her blood pressure would come back up a little bit. She asked me, is there any downside for taking licorice for too long and too much? I said, yeah, your blood pressure will go up, which is what we're trying to get. So keep watching it. Adrenal fatigue, you know, talking about some of the things, if you detect that you can help them with, and then fluid and electrolyte samples. So it's important stuff. And, you know, we don't quite think about it in terms of what all the implications are, like the bones and minerals, right? So we have calcium in there and we have other things that you can test. And is that really an indication? How long is this one? I think these are all kind of short.
Welcome back.
That's only 10 minutes. Okay. So how do we look at some of the things related to bone? Well, iron. iron is one of the minerals, right? So we want to look at low or high. We looked at this in anemia, but what do we want to look at? When somebody has low iron or a sudden drop in iron, we always want to rule out blood loss, chronic disease, or other disease, not necessarily just give them more iron, right? Because that's a Band-Aid. And even a nutrient can be a Band-Aid. Hemochromatosis, we've seen some of that. It's an iron overload disease. So if their iron is too high, you always have to compare it with ferritin. Always have to compare it with ferritin. Could be that they just take too much iron. It could be that they are drinking alcohol, which actually increases iron absorption, or they're eating like fortified cereal. So it's always looking at what are they taking, what's in their mineral, their vitamin supplementation, and all that kind of stuff. And then we look at calcium. Blood levels are going to remain fairly consistent, right? So you can't look at the person's calcium in their blood and determine, oh, they might have osteoporosis, because it's one of those critical things, because we need the calcium for contraction of the heart muscle. So it could go high when somebody's thyroid supplementing. You know, they're on Armour, or they're on Synthroid, or they're alcoholic, or parathyroid is the most probable cause of high thyroid. And I usually will have them check their parathyroid hormones if we see it. If we just see it once, and it's just borderline, I'll check it again within another couple of months. And if it's either going higher or not going lower, then I would look at the parathyroids or doing a what's called ionized calcium. And then when is it low? Well, oftentimes in these things, which we see a lot, right? Thyroid, vitamin D, magnesium, the parathyroids again, absorption problems, et cetera. And then we look at phosphorus, right? It's really important to look at the phosphorus. If it's high, they may be taking too much vitamin D. Maybe they just decided to take 10 or 20,000 vitamin D units because they read about vitamin D on Dr. Mercola's site or something, you know, and they're concerned. So they started taking it. Well, it could cause their calcium to go too high because it's increasing the absorption of calcium. It could be a problem with the kidneys. It could be that they're taking laxatives, et cetera. So these are things like, these are good cheat sheets for you to have. Bones and minerals, right? Zinc, we don't measure zinc in a regular blood test, but if they have low alkaline phosphatase and low white blood cells, they may have zinc deficiency, very commonly associated. They may have a molybdenum deficiency if they have increased iron and decreased uric acid. So it's looking at patterns that are not normally just going to pop out on the page for you. The blood chem software will suggest these things as well. And then here's a couple of cases. Any questions about that? I mean, there's just such a wealth of information. I always say it's a treasure trove of information that's often overlooked. You know, what medical doctor on your routine exam is going to tell you you might have a molybdenum deficiency or a zinc deficiency based on your blood levels? But you can. And you can confirm it. You can ask questions and have them fill out the form that we have in the history on the various nutrients and see if there's a consistency and a congruence. Again, we don't test vitamins in the standard. But we can infer vitamins based on certain findings. And this is a short one, I believe.
No, wait.
12 minutes. So we have, of course, vitamin D we measure directly. And yeah, the lab will say if it's above 32, optimal is actually, I think I like to get people in the 75 to 100, especially if they have an autoimmune disease or if they've had cancer, have cancer in the family. And we have more details in the micronutrients module about vitamin D. Ah, here we go. This is one of mine. I was looking for this slide the other day. I couldn't find it. Now I know where it is. If I see them below 20, I'll have them take 20,000 every day for a week, or up to a month, and then 10,000 for 2 months, and then retest. If they're willing to test at 6 weeks, I really like that best. Some people, because of genetics, it just creeps up really slowly, even at the high dose, and some people it shoots right up. This is just a guideline that I put together. It doesn't mean you have to follow this, but it's just something that I kind of use sort of loosely. And I was trying to figure out, like, how do I determine it? And it was all in my head, so I got it down on paper. And, you know, sometimes it's a gut feel as well. folate. What do we look at for folate and B12? Well, we look at the red blood cell counts. We look at the MCV, the MCH, the MCHC. We look at iron potentially, RDW, low white blood cell, low. And these pluses are minus. Plus means it's high and minus means it's low. So these are general. It doesn't mean you have to have all of these in place to have a problem, but it gives you an idea that, wow, the MCV is high. What about these other things? There's a lot of these that are out of balance. And homocysteine is a very good indicator for B12 and folate. And here's some related to B6. So these, the AST, ALT, GGT, are all B6-dependent enzymes that are used, and they're used in the liver and other parts of the body. So if they happen to be low, doctors will just say, oh, yeah, fine. You know, it's low. There's no reason for it. But from a functional perspective, we want to rule out whether there's a B6 deficiency. And vitamin C, we're not measuring it in the blood, but we can get an idea if the hematocrit is low and the alk phos is high and the red blood cells are high, the hemoglobin low, hematocrit low. Any combination of this might infer that there's a vitamin C deficiency. I would highly recommend you print these out. And it's not like you're going to say, hey, you have a vitamin C deficiency because of this, or you have a B6 deficiency. It's more, there's some suggestion in here that this might be out of balance. And let's look at your diet and let's look at some other symptoms. And that's where you do those other the evaluations, the assessment scorecards for the vitamins and minerals that we have in the history taking, this one module. All right, where are we? Blood sugar. You guys should have heard lots and lots and lots of stuff on blood sugar so far. So let's look at those. The problem is most doctors are not looking at the markers for detecting this early. And you know, there's your ideal, your fastings, et cetera. But we have to look at the hemoglobin A1C and have them do the postprandials. This thing used to be $35, a blood spot test for insulin. In fact, I have one. I haven't sent it in yet. But I heard that now they are much more expensive than that. So I have not yet reached out to them to see why and if they're going to bring it back. But yeah, you can actually have people test their insulin. And so if they test their insulin in the morning, they get their fasting. And then they eat a meal. Like, what's the highest carb meal they may eat? For me, it might be, you know, blueberries and coconut yogurt. I'd eat a meal of blueberries and coconut yogurt, and then I tested it 45 minutes to an hour later. You still have to send it off to the lab, just like a blood spot fatty acid. You put it on the little card. You can see the little card here. But then you can get an idea of how your body's responding. And let me just take a step on this because somebody asked this in our Facebook group the other day. How do I know if I'm in, you know, a LADA, a latent autoimmune diabetes of adulthood, and her doctor wanted to put her on insulin because her insulin was low. Like, what's low, right? And you have to look at it as fasting insulin might be low, but as long as you're responding to a carbohydrate load, that means your pancreas is still functional. If somebody has a fasting insulin of 2 and their postprandial of 2 after a high carbohydrate meal is 2, that to me says there's something going on in the pancreas and it's not producing enough insulin. So we've gone from being hyperinsulinemia to somebody whose pancreas is starting to fail. The way I usually look at that to determine why is I would go and have them get the antibodies, anti-insulin antibodies, anti-islet cell antibodies, which is the cells in the pancreas that produce it. And then there's also C-peptide. You can look at GAD. Just to see if they have this indication of an autoimmune process that sometimes comes on late. And sometimes it's just years and years and decades of insulin resistance and hyperinsulinemia that just causes the pancreas to fail. And we know that every time the blood sugar goes high, it's causing damage to those beta cells. Hemoglobin A1C and why that's so important. I like to see it between 4.5 and 5. You know, a lot of people get it down from 7 to 5.1. We celebrate that, right? We really do. So it's really a matter of looking at that because so many people could be detected in terms of heading towards diabetes before they actually are diagnosed if we were to do this hemoglobin A1C and the insulin. because too many times when somebody gets diagnosed with diabetes, meaning that, hey, your blood sugar fasting is 120, and they do the A1C, it's anywhere from 7 to 11. Like, it didn't just get this way overnight, guys, right? And it was something you could have detected over the years and helped this person to reverse before it became a disease, right? And there's just some stuff in here about all the different measurements and all. So there's a lot of good stuff in here. And a lot of this is stuff that's in the insulin resistance program as well. All right. And these you can get, the A1C test you can get at home. I will warn you, they're not easy, right? You have a couple of steps to them, and I screwed a couple up, and they're not cheap. So, you know, just be forewarned with people that you know, it's probably cheaper to just have them go to the lab and get it taken if they're going for other stuff. But if they want to keep an eye on it, they can get these kits. But just to follow the instructions, I got cocky and went, oh, yeah, I know how to do this. And I went, what happened here? And I was supposed to do this or that, or I can't remember exactly. I talk about the home testing and all in here. So this is pretty packed presentation. A lot of it is stuff from the insulin resistance program. How long is this one?
Hello.
Yes, 26 minutes.
Okay. Rita, may I ask a question?
Yeah.
I'm a part of a diabetes group on Facebook, and they are definitely advertising like higher than our optimal markers of postprandial glucose specifically. So I was curious, for like type 1 diabetics, would you expect that if you had a type 1 diabetic client to just...
You want to get as close to it as possible.
Yeah.
Close to it as possible. They're telling them, oh, as long as you're at 140 at 2 hours after, you're like, yeah, that's bullshit. You should never go to 140.
Really? Yeah, that's what they're saying. Okay.
Right? But they're not also talking about how to control it with food. Right? You want to get, if you're type 1 and you're on insulin, you want the dose of insulin you have to take to be as small as possible. So all the stuff we talk about with type 2s and with insulin resistance apply. Right? The more you exercise, the less insulin you need. The better you keep the food in a tight control range, the less insulin you need. And in the long run, the lower your sugars and the lower your insulin, the less likely you are to be having, you know, complications and retinopathies and all that. So yeah, Annette can speak to that. I don't know if she's still on. I don't see her on the screen, but she's been taking a diabetes. There she is. She's been taking a conventional diabetes coaching training, right? So she gets this certification. And she, you can just mention what you mentioned to me the other day.
Oh, I'm taking a CDE course, Certified Diabetic Instructor, and it's hideous, the things. Like the root cause of all diabetes, and I don't care if that's 1, 2, 1.5 gestational, whatever, the root cause is high blood sugar. We don't go farther back. It's just high blood sugar. Most of those groups on Facebook follow the ADA recommendations. So everything's going to be higher. Everything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So you have to kind of sit there and, you know, the more you learn about it, the more you can be participating and giving some people some stuff. But like Annette sees, right? What do they call it? Eat and pray or something? Or
eat and cover.
Eat and cover, right? So you basically eat whatever you want and take enough insulin to manage it. That's sad because the complications of excess insulin over time is really awful. The complications of excess sugar over time is awful. So this is where our education and us training the communities and going out and doing community education. And for me, doing a lot of these workshops and webinars where I'm reaching thousands of people online is super important.
Yeah. Dr. Rita Marie, I've got a story. My husband, now he's listening to me because it's so predictable what you said. What you said would happen, happened. He's on cholesterol medicine and he wouldn't change his diet or exercise. So I said, well, you're going to be a diabetic before long, you know, according to my classes and what I've learned. So it got to 90. And the doctor said, oh, we're going to watch this now. And I'm saying, you need to stop eating bread. You need to stop eating rice because it's just going to keep going up. And like Dr. Rita Marie says, they're waiting for it to get to 120 so they can give you a prescription. Well, it took about a year and a half And it's just like you said, it hit 110. And I said, you're pre-metabolic. Let's talk about getting rid of that rice. And people just want to believe in their doctor. And it got to 120, and now he's on metformin. And it's like, can you help me?
And it's like, now he says it, right?
Well, what do you think?
I was willing to help you 20 points ago, so we didn't get here.
But the doctor at 90 never had a conversation with him about food or, yeah, it'd be nice if you go exercise.
Yes. This is where it's falling short, and this is where we can fill the gap, right? And warn people, like I always show, I love my tip of the iceberg slide. I show it in all my presentations now, right? This is what you're seeing up here. This is what's happening underneath. And then I show the heart and the, you know, the cancer cells growing. We got to scare people into this. And I'm not a big fan of scaring people into taking action. But when they think, I said, this is what happens if you listen to your doctor. It's going to go from here to here to here. You know what's happening inside of you that you're not seeing? Walls of your vessels are thickening. They're becoming more inelastic. Right? You're having these metabolic changes that are happening inside of you. And you're not going to see them until it's too late. My parents, they didn't see it. They just had to die to see it. And 50% of all women with heart disease, the first sign is sudden death from heart attack. But there are things we can do before it gets there. There are things we can do to predict it by doing some more advanced testing, like what we just taught you in the cardiac test. But there's things we can do to prevent it, like, you know, the diet, the lifestyle, the seven pillars, et cetera. And that's where we have to, that's where we owe it to people to get that change. And it's an uphill battle with medicine.
Well, it was nice to say, yes, I was right.
I told you so, dear. Yeah. I love you. I don't want this to happen to you. All right. You want to look at thyroid? This is another area of my pet peeves. TSH is fine. You're normal. TSH doesn't mean you're normal. It could be that your pituitary is just not secreting enough to stimulate your thyroid, but your thyroid's going downhill. So we have to look at optimals. And one of the things I've put into your blood chem your master tracker is a really cool spreadsheet from Dr. Rhines. And he compares, he's like, okay, where the TSH and the T4 and the T3 should line up on this line of, you know, the range they should be in. If you're off to one side or the other, then you can start to look at under conversion, high over conversion, et cetera. So I give you a lot in this thyroid. There's your typical ranges. Let me go back and get the full size one because it's too hard to see with the small ones. There we go. Print these out, have them available, right? Lab range, ideal range. So they don't look at, most of them don't look at T3. And T3 is what the cells see. Free T3 is what the actual, that's the active thyroid. Why would we not look at that? Why don't we just look at what the cells actually are seeing? Because you can have perfectly normal TSH and perfectly normal T4, but if the free T3 is low, the cells aren't getting enough stimulation from the thyroid. Simple as that. If there's antibodies, it means that we're attacking either the binding globulin, which is part of the thyroid hormone itself, or the TPO, which is part of the enzymatic process where the thyroid is formed. So this is a good chart that you're welcome to print out and keep. There's a lot of different types. When I took a class with Dr. Karazi and he went through 22 different types, well, we don't have to cut straws quite that much. It really breaks down to about 7 different categories of thyroid dysfunction, and some of the others that he had in there are just finer points. But we talk about this in the physical exam and the history taking, you know, about doing some basic screening and then through exam and looking at it and through symptoms. But here's some of these things. The basic screen that most labs will do is total T4, which most of them have cut out now. They don't even test that. And I'll get back to that in a second because it's so important and it's a pet peeve of mine. T3 uptake and free thyroxine index, which are just calculated. They're just calculated. They're estimates, they're guesses, really. And I have found that when I do the free T3 and I look at the T3 uptake, or I do the free T4 and I compare it to the free thyroxine index, they're not comparable. this misses cases where there's a subtle imbalance. And then TSH, everybody does. But we really want to do the antibodies, right? Free T3, free T4, ideally, to get the ratios. I don't often, you know, insist on total T3 because it's not as important to me, because it's kind of like an intermediate. So if we look at the way the thyroid works, the thyroid itself produces T4. The total amount that it produces is T4. Why wouldn't we want to measure that? We want to know what the capacity of that thyroid gland is. But a lot of them aren't even testing that anymore. The beginning and end are total T4, everything the thyroid produces, and then free T3, because that's what the cells take. And to just backtrack a little, we go through this in the thyroid module in detail. The free is when they're not bound to a protein. Going through the blood, they have to be bound to protein or else they'll be active. You know, they're trying to keep them from being active. So we keep them bound until we're ready to use them. At the cellular level, we convert. So looking at this total picture really gives us a lot of information. So we have to look at the free T3. So if I were to just have to cut it down to just a couple of things, I would look at total T4, free T3, and then I would look at antibodies. If I only could pick one, I would pick thyroid peroxidase, because about 80% of people with autoimmune thyroid have thyroid peroxidase. But if I suspect autoimmune, I would make them get the thyroid, and that was negative, I would have them get the antithyroglobulin. I have in a handful of cases seen where their TPO is fine, but antithyroglobulin was elevated. Okay. Medications, you know, you want to rule out that they're not on medications, and then we have cases, and then different, I threw in some management slides just for the heck of it, and back to vitamin D, because it's so important with somebody with an autoimmune disease, especially a Hashimoto's. That's important to be looking at. Okay? And we go into the details there. How long is this one?
Hello.
23 minutes. So they're all nice and short to keep you from, you know, getting overwhelmed. And you can play them over and over again if you want to. Digestion. How could you tell the digestion in the blood? Right? If you were to say, what are the digestive markers in the blood to, you know, a typical Western-trained doctor, they go, huh? You can't tell the digestion from the blood. Sure you can. There's several ways. So let's see how long this one is.
Hello and welcome to
our short one. It's only 7 minutes. So let's go and look at this. I'll give you an idea on how you can study it. So if you have somebody with low stomach acid, these are some of the findings you may see, right? Not all of them necessarily, but if you start to see a high BUN, could be kidney, could be high in low stomach acid as well. But when you see low BUN, blood urea nitrogen, it means that there's low amount of nitrogenous waste in the blood. And what that relates to is that the body isn't breaking down proteins into amino acids. So that's where I go. I infer that it's low stomach acid or malabsorption. So we're looking at all these markers, and you don't have to have all of them to say, hi, I have a suspicion. But if you start to point these out and you go, wow, there's at least four of these low stomach acid markers, I better pay attention. Let's ask them about their stomach. And if you see a combination of this along with markers like neutrophils being up, like a indication of a bacterial, then you might be thinking of H. pylori. Anyway, so there's what you'd see in an H. pylori or a hypochlorhydria. And then if you're suspicious of the small intestine or pancreas, you might see some of these off. And some of this is like, well, of course, alkaline phosphatase is related to zinc, and zinc is important for making digestive enzymes. Low GGT could be malabsorption. Low hematocrit could all be malabsorption. Pancreatitis is more of an inflammatory condition, so you're going to see some of those other things that are elevated. And then large intestine, you're more looking for the parasites. And low sodium might be an indication that they are on laxatives or they have diarrhea because they're losing fluids. Okay. All right. What else do we have? Where are we? Kidney. There is a kidney panel. Right, so these are the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 that you're going to see that are related to the kidneys. blood urea nitrogen, byproduct of protein metabolism, eliminated through the kidneys. And that's why if it's low, we're suspicious about protein malabsorption, a creatinine muscle breakdown. So if you see some of these being high, you're suspicious that either there's an excessive amount of muscle breakdown, and that can happen in some of the muscular dystrophy diseases or other sorts of things, autoimmune diseases. But if you see that it's low, you're suspicious that there may be some issues going on with absorption. Uric acid, it's there with people with gout. We see people with gout. So it's a protein metabolism that's eliminated through the kidneys. So when we see these things high and several of them high, we're suspicious that the kidneys aren't doing their filtration properly. And then we look at the glomerular filtration rate, which provides an assessment of how well do the kidneys filter. So we give you these charts, print them out. What does it mean, high or low? What does creatinine mean, high or low? What does uric acid mean, high or low? We give you a kidney panel case. And then various markers for renal dysfunction where you might want to look at, maybe there's a stone, right? Maybe there's a glomerular nephritis, which is an inflammation of the nephrons. And then muscle wasting and edema. So there's all sorts of possibilities in here. Watch this, but also go into your blood chem software and click on it. If you're seeing somebody with elevations or depressions in this, look at what they say. They go into a lot of detail in there. All right, what's next? Kidneys, liver, and gallbladder.
Hello.
Short, 15 minutes. And a lot of times it's the enzymes, and these are enzymes that are used in the liver, but not only in the liver. So when we see elevations of these, we're thinking that there's some liver dysfunction, some breakdown of liver tissue, but they're also like ALT, also used to be called SGPT. Were you around back in that day when it was SGPT, Allison, or has it always been ALT to you? When I first started, it was SGPT and SGOT. An enzyme found primarily in the liver, but it's also in the heart. So you're kind of looking for patterns again, right? If you see a bunch of these that related to liver, it's likely liver. But there's ways to do certain ones of these with what's called isoenzymes. The AST, it's found in the liver, but also skeletal and heart muscle. Abnormalities can represent liver disease, but also you want to rule out that there isn't something else. Bilirubin is pretty much related to the liver in that bilirubin is a byproduct of actually red blood cell breakdown. So it's actually also related to spleen, but it's supposed to be eliminated in the bile and high may result in jaundice, that yellowing of the skin and the eyes. Alkphos, a protein found in diagnosing proper bone and health. And alkphos and LDH, lactate dehydrogenase, you can also do something called isoenzymes, which means you can break down the like alkphos 1, alkphos 2, alkphos 3, and one might be in the bone and one might be in the liver, one might be in the muscles, and so it helps you, or the gut. It helps you to be able to do that. Generally, you do those when they're out of the lab range. And then the protein is super important. Like protein can give you an idea of malabsorption, right? Especially with albumin. And then the globulin is proteins that fight infection. So we're looking at if it's very low or very high, it could be an immune system issue as well. GGT is that really alcoholism elevates it, but toxins. If, you know, we're exposed to a lot of petrochemicals and stuff in our world, I really like to see it around 10. Below 10 might indicate that there's some B6 deficiency. Above 25 is certainly going to be a problem, and I would suspect alcoholism. And here's the thing. It can be elevated in short term. Because I remember somebody going, wow, why is my GGT so high? It's never been high before. I said, what did you do over the weekend? Did you go out drinking? Did you have a party? I'm like, they're like, oh, yeah. Would that affect it that quickly? Yeah, it can. So it can be acute alcohol ingestion, not necessarily alcoholism. Although multiple periods of acute alcohol ingestion would, to me, be suspicious that I'd want to rule out the addiction piece. So then if you want to, you know, distinguish between like the liver and the bile insufficiency, here's some markers that you can look at. And the gallbladder and liver, again, we go through that in detail in the thing. There's the isoenzymes like I was talking to you about before. All right. So each one, like here's what I would recommend if you're ready to tackle this, pick, you know, a couple of these a week to work on and really get to know them before you move on to the next ones. And you'll be through them in no time. I think there's 12, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. Yeah, there's 12 and then these are just your tools. So if there's 12 and you do two a week, you can get through this in 6 weeks. If there's 12 and you do one a week, then you can get through it in 12 weeks, which is 3 months. So I don't think you need quite that long. I mean, if you're really ambitious, you can do more, but don't force yourself to sit down and watch like four of these in a row. Really get familiar with and comfortable with each one as you go through. Finally, we're going to look at lipids and cardiovascular, and we go into a lot more detail in this in the cardiovascular module and also in the advanced blood chemistry. Okay, how long is this one?
Hello.
26 minutes. So it's more than just how high is your cholesterol, right? We already know HDL and LDLs make a difference. Triglyceride HDL ratios make a difference. But there's so much more looking at homocysteine and C-reactive protein. And then on an advanced panel where you can look at VLDL and apolipoprotein A and B, and then the particle sizes. So this shows the various cardiovascular modules and molecules and describes them, the markers. What does C-reactive protein actually do? What does homocysteine actually do? What is creatine phosphokinase? And here's the thing. If you see this elevated on somebody and they're like, what? This is crazy. Ask if they've just gone for a run or done intensive exercise before getting it done. My husband had this elevated one time when he came back and I'm like, what? This is crazy. He had gone for a run and then went to the lab to get his blood drawn. So make sure that they don't do any exercise before they go and get it done because it can elevate this marker. Now see this elevated after intense exercise from the breakdown of the skeletal muscle. And this has the isoenzymes as well. So if you do see this elevated and it's valid, they didn't just exercise, you want to know, is it the brain and the lungs? Is it the heart or is it the skeletal muscles? So you can isolate where they're having the tissue breakdown. Conditions that can contribute, right? Sometimes people have chronic lipid abnormalities because their thyroid's out of balance. They have, you know, fatty liver, diabetes, et cetera. What happens with low cholesterol? We don't see it all that often, but we do. We have somebody in ERC who is chronically low cholesterol. He's been in a plant working for the last 25 years where he's exposed to horrific chemicals every day. And we've got him on a heavy metal and a chemical detox right now. But until he gets out of that environment, he's still going to have issues. And he's retiring in 2 years. So we're just keeping our fingers crossed for when he can get out of that and really start to reverse this stuff. The VAP, it used to be called VAP. We'll have to update this. It's more updated in our cardiovascular module, but same idea. It's just this particular company doesn't make it anymore, but you can get the advanced lipid panel on Dr. Hopkins' site or pretty much anywhere you can get it. So it tests the, like a normal LDL, HDL, triglyceride, total cholesterol, but it also looks at VLDL, very low density lipoproteins, which are more dangerous than the LDLs. It looks at the non-HDL, everything that's not HDL, ApoB and L lipoprotein little a. This is, these are dangerous markers if people have them elevated. Then there's intermediate LDLs. Then you've got the sizes, the subclasses, and then they look at metabolic syndrome markers, et cetera. So this test is not there anymore. And it gives you a description of it, and you can apply most of these to the ones that are in the advanced lipid panel. And they just give you some general ideas for what do you do if you find these people with these elevations. All right. That's it for all of our markers. Yay. Okay, so you should be able to go through all that, you know, over the course of 6 to 12 weeks. Who's going to commit to getting this? Who's done this all already? Anybody?
I've done most of it. I've just got to go through the archives.
Yeah, and go through and do your tests and your quizzes at the end of each module and get ready. Okay, good, good.
But I got to go back, I mean, but because it's all...
It's archived in your brain, you mean?
Right, it's all new to me because I never had to learn it before, other than just basic stuff. It's
yeah.
hard to remember and then think, you know, and there's so much information, which is wonderful, but just trying to organize it in my brain and be able to apply it. It's just going to take some time, like you say. And I did get some lab work from somebody today, and I'm going to enter it into the chemistry set. They're an epileptic and just had cancer. So
wow, complicated. Yeah.
Complicated case. So I'm excited that, you know, that I actually went out and did it.
Good for you. Just don't hesitate to ask folks if they're willing to let you just do it, even if you haven't been through the module yet. Just use your software, put it in, and then look things up as you can. That's the way you learn.
Right.
Necessity is the mother of invention.
So, yes. Yeah, so I hope to get that done. And then she's got labs from last November. Should that be added as well?
If she has multiples, yeah, because you want to compare. You want to see what her trends and her patterns are.
Okay.
Is she moving in the right direction or the wrong?
Well, the problem is that people, and not that this is a bad thing, they listen to their doctor, but then they don't question the doctor. Mm-hmm. And so, entre you, me, I'm just saying, well, you know, I'm not going to treat or diagnose you, but I'm going to give you some good questions and compliment.
Right.
And see what maybe some other things you could do to, she needs to gain 5 pounds and she's having a hard time doing that. And the thyroid test only had the TSH in it, nothing else.
Right. It's all about education, right? That's where it's so hard to just like randomly talk to somebody because they want answers. And it's education, and there's so much education and empowerment. And that's why we love taking people through the ERC program, because they learn how to read their labs. And it's amazing when they're sitting there watching other people get their labs done. The people that go at the end, they'll go, well, I think I have this. I think I have that. I think this is out of balance. What about this? What about that? They're really learning. And I believe that the future of our healthcare system is empowered self-care. And that's what we can help people to be empowered and not be at the mercy of their doctor.
Right. I went through that as a Lilachi League leader, that women that wanted to still breastfeed, and then they got an infection and the doctor said, you have to get off your medicine. And that's kind of what started me in this field, was no, let's ask
questions. Let's find some other approaches, right?
Right. Let's see what else we could do. And doctors aren't trained in breastfeeding either. So,
no.
You know.
No. Even the GYNs aren't, the OBs.
So to answer your question, yes, this is the first one I've gotten all the way through.
Yay.
So,
good for you. Congratulations. It's awesome. I'm going to just show you the last two. I think this is just like some tutorials on how to use the master tracker and how to use the computerized blood software. So you can watch that when you get there. Transcript. Why is there no transcript even though we have a video? I don't know. We'll have to make a note of that and get that to Jazzy to send off the transcript, the video. And then this is tools for computerized blood software. So it's basically us going through. We probably should put under the advanced that, didn't we have a talk in ACR with Dr. Weatherby where he talked about it? We should probably attach that to this page.
There's already task for that.
There's there. All right. We just have to make sure we get followed up. After we get through this ERC thing and the shine, I mean, we're going to really, you know, hone in and find out. I know we have somebody that's assigned right now to go through all the modules. What is this? So you find past edited versions of the videos and files from an earlier blood chem seminar from 2012. Okay. So you can watch my old ones as well. If you just can't get enough of me and you want to watch it, I guess we put those up there. So any questions or comments or things that you want to get clarity on?
I was curious. I've thought a good case study for me because two of my sisters are pregnant right now. And I thought a good thing for me to be would to dive into this, and I can look at their love labs, and I can use that as a case study. So that might be fun. But also I was curious, like for pregnant women, will there be different optimal ranges? Like would we expect to see some, especially I'm thinking in the minerals, we'd expect to see some lower than ideal.
Yeah, that's a good question. I'm not sure. That's a good thing to look in the blood chem. I think there's certain things, like the RDAs are different when you're pregnant.
Yeah.
I'm not sure that the ranges are all that much different from most things. So that's a good question to ask.
Mm-hmm.
You know, to kind of research. I don't know the exact answer to that. But that's
just from my experience, things to look for are like the protein and the albumin and those kind of digestive. And maybe it was just because it was important for me. But those were things that when I work with my midwife.
Yeah, those tend to be lower, but as the ideal range change, I think is more the question. Yeah, those are the ones that you have to be concerned about, right? Because we'll see that. We'll see the electrolytes shift a lot, right? But I don't know that the ranges are that much different.
No,
it's more that we're going to see deficiencies or excesses.
Right.
Different things based on the pregnant status. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Hmm. But yeah, one more question. Is there I've been asking this in the chat, but is there like kind of a good blood panel we can recommend just to an overview? I know a lot of our clients have very specific labs they're looking for, but I was wondering, do we offer or have any such full blood panel that would just be a good?
Well, there's the general one that Direct Labs offers, which is called the Comprehensive Wellness Panel. Same thing. I think I replied to that to go to runmylabs.com, and I had Dr. Hopkins set me up some of my panels. So I have Dr. Rita Marie's Basic, Dr. Rita Marie's Basic Plus, you know, so take a look at some of those.
Okay. Yeah, I'll look at that. Oh, yep. Uh-huh.
Yep.
Uh-huh. And can we direct anybody to that or only yep. IND? Or I'm sorry, Dr. Reed.
Anybody can go there. Anybody can go there. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Yep. Yep. And as you get, you know, more established and finished, you can create a portal for yourself.
Oh, okay. Cool.
You don't want to pay a couple $100 to have a portal set up for yourself, but at this point, just send them to me. But yeah, you can do that in the future.
Cool.
Yeah. It's really cool. Allie, did you have anything you want to add or discuss from a medical perspective? This is a little different than how you learned blood chemistry, I'm sure. Whoops. You lost your mind. There she is.
The main thing is to be patient with doctors. They've just been taught a different way.
Yes.
Wrong, it's just different. They've got different focus. They're looking for disease management.
Right.
In this scenario, we're not doing the same thing.
Yeah.
But it's been absolutely eye-opening working with you on this sort of work for the last 4 or 5 years. So 4 years.
Awesome.
I've made a few comments about Gilbert's syndrome. It's really interesting. Do you know anything about Gilbert's syndrome, Rita Marie?
Yeah, I mean, my husband has it. It's basically a marginally elevated bilirubin. It's always been taught to be, it doesn't mean anything. But
exactly, this is what I was telling a patient today, you know, doctors are always told it doesn't mean anything, but in actual fact, it does.
Yeah, and in my opinion, you know, when I look at him, and he ends up with a little bit elevated cholesterol compared to what he should have based on his eating patterns, etc., and I think that there's some difficulty eliminating the bile, right? And so that the bilirubin builds up, the cholesterol builds up, all those things that are supposed to be just dumped in the bile are building up. And I think that metabolic healing, Michael McAvoy talked about some genetic tendencies that he says it's not as, you know, it's definitely a sign that there's an imbalance in the body. And I don't think we just should overlook it.
Mm. And I think people need to look after their livers. So the chap I was
talking
to today, he came to me with tiredness and admitted he drank excessively. I felt that he had hepatomegaly, which means an enlarged liver. So I've arranged an ultrasound scan, which hasn't been done yet, but he came back to discuss the blood results. Mostly were normal. His gamma GT was normal, which was lucky for him, you know.
Yeah.
But his bilirubin was like 24, normal range being up to 21. And so I explained to him about Gilbert's, and he was really pleased because, as far as any normal doctor is concerned, that's normal. You know, don't need to worry about it. But I know because I've got a friend with Gilbert, because she's French.
Gilbert. That's how I've always learned to say it, Gilbert.
She always has to nurture her liver, and I feel you really need to be taking liver support supplements and not drinking, certainly not drinking excessive alcohol.
Right.
And being careful about what toxins you're exposing your liver to.
Exactly, yeah, that everyday detox cup. Yeah.
Yeah. Really good point about the fat digestion, and maybe if there's a buildup of cholesterol, maybe there's a buildup of fat soluble vitamins as well, like vitamin A.
So it, you know, the more you do it and the more you think about how the body works, not just somebody taught me how to read this and it means this, but when you superimpose it on how does the body work, you can go, well, wait a minute, if this is high, then why is that high, and what other things might be high at the same time, and what kind of complications can it cause? All right, guys, we're going to go. We have another, I got to get a little food in me. We're going to have at 5:15, we're going to have a advanced clinical resources. You don't want to miss this. She is so funny. If you've never seen her before, she's hysterical. And she's going to talk about gut and, you know, poop basically is her thing. And castor oil packs and all that. So it'll be very entertaining. I will guarantee you that. All right. We'll see you soon, guys. Bye.
Bye-bye. Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
Thank you.